Miss your favourite show? Then listen online at the RN website. And Natasha Mitchell joining you this morning for Life Matters. It's Friday, it's Talkback Day. Get a degree. It'll improve your job prospects. That's the mantra, isn't it? It makes sense. The knowledge economy wants us to be knowledgeable. And people have certainly taken up that call ever more since the cap on enrolments in Australian universities was removed back in 2012. You might remember a new demand-driven system was introduced. So with the exception of medicine, it allowed universities to determine what undergraduate courses that they would offer and how many undergrad students they would take. Now, you'd think an educated workforce was just what the economist ordered. But could it be that too many people are graduating for the number of jobs available right now? Are they being churned out into the labour market, a labour market that can't keep up? So we're asking you this morning, do you have friends or offspring at uni navigating this right now? Perhaps they've done a generalist degree. Where next? Perhaps you did a degree and you've got a long lens on this. Where has it taken you in life? Was it where you expected to be? Or perhaps down a different path altogether? Maybe that's not a problem. If you are doing a degree right now, how do you feel about your job prospects at the moment? Tell us what you think you might end up doing, or perhaps you're a recent graduate with some experience there. Should we think of university and the whole experience of uni only in terms of vocation? Tell us your story of life at or after uni, 1300 22 55 76. 1300, call RN. Many of you are calling right now. If you're in South Australia, ring right now and you can text us 20418 226 576. WA, Queensland, Northern Territory. The listener line is 0283 1430. On Twitter, at RN Life Matters. And look, our Facebook page just went off, actually, last night, so keep the conversation going there. We have two guests this morning. We have James Avanitakis. He's a professor in the School of Humanities and Communication Arts and head of what's called the Academy at the University of Western Sydney. In 2012, he was named the Prime Minister's University Teacher of the Year, no less. Welcome.
Hi, Natasha. How are you?
And, of course, you've been with us before. Great to have you back.
Thank you. Great to be here.
We also have with us Brian Guthrie. Now, Brian is a policy and strategy advisor at what's called Graduate Careers Australia. They work closely with business and the higher ed sector and government to foster employment and career opportunities for graduates and collect all sorts of data to help them with that. And I think I called you, not Bruce, but you are Bruce Guthrie. Welcome, Bruce.
I am Bruce Guthrie, Natasha. Thanks for the,
Sorry about the invitation.
No, it's
fine. Thanks for making it to our Orange Studios. Appreciate it.
Pleasure.
Let's start with your own stories because I'm curious to know. James, you weren't always an academic. What did you originally study?
Yeah, my first degree was in economics, and I actually worked in banking and finance for, I think, 8-9 years. I then ended up running some human rights organisations for about 5 years, and then I transferred into a PhD, followed that pathway, and ended up in academia. So it's definitely been a different pathway.
A circuitous route.
Yeah, it certainly has been, but it's been a great route, right? Like I think in some ways it captures a lot of experiences these days of people who don't just have one career. You know, that idea of, you know, the classic idea of you started working at the Combank when you were, you know, 20 years old as a teller and you work your way through up to CEO, hopefully, that kind of linear pathway or that kind of one employer and one experience just is not the thing anymore. Like, but people don't see it anymore.
What did your degree give you?
Well, I mean, I think most degrees...
Ultimately, it gave you an academic career, but just in that short term.
Yeah, I mean, I think most degrees should have two aims, right? And I think that's what mine did. I mean, the first is obviously to learn the skills that you need for a job. If you're studying accounting to be an accountant, I studied economics to be an economist and ended up economic forecasting and so on. But I think a good degree also gives you the second thing, which I think is that learning to learn, ability to learn to learn. And I think that ability to critically think, to confront challenges, to work across issues, to see the problems in a slightly different way. And I think that's what a degree has to give you. I think they need to give you both those things. I can't think they can't be one-dimensional. They can't give you only one of those things. They need to give you both of those things. And
so
I think that's important.
The conversation today will focus on very much what the workforce is listening out for as well. So we'll get to that. Bruce, you started out studying psychology. What twists and turns have you had over the years?
I had a previous life before university. I worked in the music industry in the late 70s and early 80s. Before I realised that I was probably getting nowhere fast, so I entered UNSW as a mature age student, what was then mature age, which was 25, and I did a double major in psych and sociology and social research methods, but more importantly, which led me into statistical analysis and saw me take up a job at University of Sydney in their career service. Conducting a survey of what happens to graduates after they finish their degree, and I've been stuck in that in that same sort of role ever since. With great pleasure, I love the job.
Yeah, that's right, because it is so interesting watching these trends. You know, they certainly tap into your psychology background as well. Mm. So speaking of stats, let's get a sense of the numbers of uni graduates that are leaving universities now, or the number of students entering universities with the hope to graduate. Have there been some striking changes over time?
There have been increases. And look, going back 25 to 30 years, we've seen notable rise and falls in the number of graduates entering universities. We saw in the after Gough took fees off the table in the 70s, huge rise in numbers going on to university, and those figures have waxed and waned through the 80s, into the 90s, again low in early 90s, a number of some big increases in students going to university. Which has echoes for now, because a lot of new students going into university, new graduates coming out of university at a time of a recession in the early 90s.
What sort of scale of numbers are we talking about over the last couple of years, particularly since the uncapping of university placements?
The in recent years, well, we're just about to see the first sort of big increase in numbers coming out, I suspect, at the end of this year. Mm. It's very difficult. Sometimes, I mean, we assume a degree takes 3 or 4 years, a bachelor degree takes 3 or 4 years to complete, but it can take longer. People can take obviously study part time, they can take a year off, so that tends to spread the numbers a bit more. We're seeing 250,000 graduates a year coming out of university across a wide range of levels of award, not just bachelor degree, postgraduates as well. Postgraduate is very popular degree these days.
Yeah, okay, and there's reasons for that perhaps, and we will come to those. James, from your perspective, the rise in student numbers, what's your take on it? Because you're quite pleased about that, whereas the group of eight universities are feeling rather concerned about it.
Yeah, look, I think it's fantastic. I really do. I mean, the other thing that those numbers don't tell us is the changing diversity of people in the work in that are going through education. You know, the large number of people first in family, people from low socioeconomic backgrounds who otherwise wouldn't have had that opportunity, and they also indicate, they also sort of hide the vibrancy of an educated workforce. And I think that's really, really important, because a university shouldn't just be producing someone that's work ready, they should be producing a citizen, right? And I think that's really, really important. So to sit there and say, look, there are only a certain number of people who should be allowed to go to university, yeah, there's minimum requirements, and I think that's important. But to actually just make that door really tight, where you sit there and say, we're going to measure the worth of a person's right to go to university based on that single measure, which is an ATAR, which we know is an incredibly problematic measure, I think is itself a really problematic strategy to take.
Well, there's been some interesting trends there too, and yeah, we will come back to that. So hold that thought. It's Friday. It's Laugh Matters here on RN. Natasha Mitchell with you, and I'm joined by Professor James Avanitakis and Bruce Guthrie. James is at the University of Western Sydney in the School of Humanities and Communication Arts, and Bruce Guthrie is a policy and strategy advisor with Graduate Careers Australia, really across the data. And we are talking about the twists and turns in life with a degree, whether or not we're churning out too many degrees, too many graduates in Australia, and whether there's the work for you. Now, let's get to calls because the board is filling up. Kate in New South Wales, good morning. You want to talk about volunteering.
Yeah, good morning. I actually run a young team of uni students, and we work on a volunteer program, and we were talking about this just yesterday. They're thinking about their future and what it holds. And I actually run and work in the volunteer sector, and I think it's a really great way to differentiate yourself. I've certainly found that in my career. I did marine biologists and had several family members who were doing more traditional pursuits, e.g. accounting or engineering, throw up their hands in horror, oh, you'll never get a job. But through volunteering where I could build my skills and have some different skills to other graduates, I was able to have quite a great and fun career with lots of good experiences.
So really differentiating yourself, it's not just about the degree.
No, and then you see some people who volunteered. I see some amazing young people who started volunteering when they're 16, and by the time they're 23, you know, they've run St. John's social media strategy since they were 20 to 23, and they've volunteered in that. So they can come out of university or even high school with 5 years of leadership or social media or other useful skills for the workforce just through volunteering. They have a great time.
Great.
They have a great sense of community. So they might have run, you know, a relief team and know how to stock a warehouse by the time they're 21. Through something they've done on the side.
Fantastic, Kate. I think James would like to add. Thanks for the call, Kate. James.
Yeah, thanks, Kate. I think you've picked up a really important point. And we actually have a, you know, as part of the Academy, which is a new program we're running at the university, is we have a formal volunteering program. And the volunteering is important for a number of things. I think, you know, as Kate mentioned, the connections with the community. And I think this is one of the things I think universities need to get better at. One of the problems that happens is often the graduate will come into a university or, you know, a potential graduate, a student will come into university and say, oh, I'm really got this great program I run or I volunteer in this organization, but university means that I have to give it up. And I think that's a big mistake that universities have traditionally made, requiring people to just focus in on their studies.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I've been really keen to do and we're starting to build up is say, actually, that student that's volunteering over there, we should be actually recognizing that in lots of ways, you know, either through a certificate for their volunteering or something such as recognizing it for credit points. If you can sit there and say there's the learning outcomes, because that does, it brings, it's not only gets people work ready, but it does what universities need to do, which is make you part of the community rather than separate you from the community.
That's a fantastic point, but we have to reflect on the reality of students, which is often they're holding down part-time jobs, if not full-time jobs, to pay for rent and the like now. So, you know, time is scarce and they're doing full-time degrees. Alan, in New South Wales, now you did an undergraduate degree. It took you out of public service.
It did. Well, see, what happened to me was I was a working-class kid. None of my family had ever been to university. And basically, I hated school. The one thing I learned from school was to believe that I was really stupid. And but I got a job in the public service, which was so boring, it actually encouraged me to go and do a part-time university degree. And from there, that just sort of opened all sorts of possibilities.
What sort of possibilities?
Well, I became a journalist. I started working for Queensland Radio News up in Brisbane. I was involved in community radio starting in Queensland. After a long time, and when I learned to speak proper, I got a job at the ABC and worked there for 10 years. Then I became an academic and discovered that while universities love industry people to teach courses, you've really got to have a PhD. That's your job ticket. So I went off and did a PhD.
And did the PhD? Okay.
Yeah, but the PhD was about foreign correspondence, and I did the case study in Cambodia at the end of the Khmer Rouge emergency. And I did most of my writing and research work in the downstairs bar of the Hong Kong Foreign Correspondence Club.
Fantastic.
Sounds like the ultimate PhD student, actually.
Then I came back and got a job at UTS. The last 4 years, I've been head of the Graduate School of Journalism at UTS. So a lot of your mates over there at the ABC would have been through my classes.
There you go. There's a testimony to, you know, it takes many paths out of a degree. Thanks, Alan. Terrific. Michael in Sydney, now you're a graphic designer. You're concerned about the oversupply of graduates in that field.
Yes, that's right. Back when there was enough work around for me to actually employ graphic designers in the early part of the century, we were getting 300 to 600 applicants for when we advertised for a very ordinary junior position, and I've heard that that's even worse these days. And I believe that that came about when, in the 90s, there was capping of courses. Universities started to become funded per enrolment in an effort to increase competition and excellence. But what happened, it seemed to me, that all the kids wanted to do something creative, and there used to be one-year graphic design tertiary course in Sydney, which is now moved to Enmore. Suddenly all the universities and TAFEs had a four-year degree going and just absolutely flooded out with students. And we were getting fourth-year students on work experience or work shadowing, and they had no idea that it was almost impossible for them to get a job, and that situation's continued. So they've all tend to become waiters or barkeeps or something like that. You know,
ideal situation at all. Thank you very much for illustrating your experience in your profession. That's very helpful, Michael. Thanks.
Okay, cheers.
Karenjeet in Victoria, hello. You did a Bachelor of Arts. It took you all sorts of places, by the sounds.
Absolutely. I did my Bachelor of Arts in New Zealand, and when I finished, I was on the first plane out of there about 8 hours after my last exam, and came over to Australia. And I've done all sorts of things. And just as the man previous said, there were that many graduates when I came out that we all left. And we did amazing things. I mean, I've been in stockbroking, banking, public relations, sports development, venue management, auditing, you name it. And then I, along the way, did a master's degree in education. And yes, I am a teacher as well. I do that a little bit of that on the side as well. And I did a bit of journalism. I've done all sorts of things, but I've now become a dairy farmer. And I think the lesson for everybody out of all of this is, a degree isn't about doing a particular type of job. It's about learning to think, to question, to solve problems. And if every graduate, you know, all those that come out with the graphic design degrees that aren't going to get jobs in graphic design, if the universities actually took responsibility and said, you are specialising in this area, however, the most important thing you're getting out of this degree is that you're learning to think, you're proving you can stay with something for three, four years, and that you can see it to its completion. And you might end up anywhere, but these skills are the most important skills that you're going to take away from this experience. And they could do amazing things. I mean, I've been all over the world and done some extraordinary things because I know how to think, and that's, you know, part of what you learn by doing a degree.
Fantastic call. Thank you very much, Karenjeet, and I'd like to come to Bruce on that in a tick, but let me remind you where you are. It's Life Matters. It's Friday. Our talk back is, what did you do after university? Did your degree take you where you wanted to go, or did you end up going down lots of nooks and crannies, taking lots of twists and turns along the way? How much did having a degree help you in your particular vocation? And perhaps you employ or you work with graduates. Does your industry benefit from having a large pool of educated workers, or do you think there's too many in your profession now? There's too much competition for work in your field. As a graduate, I wonder if you are experiencing the feeling of feeling overqualified and underemployed. 1300 225 76, or 1300 call RN, and some of you are texting too. I'll try and get to some of your text messages. 0418 226 576. Bruce Guthrie. Now, you track students. You do annual surveys asking what happens to people after university. And it's many paths to Rome, isn't it?
Absolutely. And in fact, look, our research tends to focus on employment post university. But university is not just about employment. A degree is not about the first job you get when you finish your qualification. It's about not only a lifetime of what some people would say call advantage in the labour market, but there is such a wide range of extra benefits to be taken. Just developing a wider view of the world, meeting people from a wide spectrum of lifestyles and
yes, but at the end of the day, you've got to pay your debts and you've got to pay your way. So let's take our prompt from the graphic designer, who is getting 600 to 700 people or whatever the figure was applying for junior jobs. What have you observed in recent years about graduates and employment and whether they're getting work straight out of uni, how you track that over time?
It is taking graduates longer to find work. It's also it's important to understand that university graduates come out into a variety of labour markets. So the labour market, the recruitment market for health sciences graduates, for example, is vastly different to that for humanities graduates. And we see humanities graduates taking longer to find work than graduates in other areas. This is especially so post the GFC in 2008-2009, when we saw a lot of recruiters pull out of the labour market and I guess essentially pull up stumps and stop hiring or notably reduce hiring. And so we're seeing it at a time when we're seeing increased numbers of graduates coming out of university, a reduced requirement for graduates in the workforce.
Bruce, we're still, last year we still saw just over 70% of graduates in full-time employment within 4 months of finishing their degrees. This isn't perhaps as apocalyptic as it might sound, although there are trends that are interesting.
Yeah, look, I think it's our research, when you do research like we do, you're looking at the whole group, and so it's 70% sounds okay. It's probably apocalyptic when it gets down to individual cases and all the stories you hear about people really doing it tough coming out of uni and trying to find their first job. What we tend to see, we also track what happens to graduates 12 months and 3 years after they finish their degree. So we see employment figures improve notably during those first follow-up surveys. In the population as a whole, graduates, bachelor degree graduates have an unemployment rate about half that for non-graduates, and so it's very strong. The longer term benefits of a degree still manifest. It's taking at the moment some graduates longer to find work than they would normally have done pre-GFC.
Yeah.
And some graduates are having to take work which they hadn't envisaged, they hadn't hoped for. It's not the dream job. In publishing, they're taking a clerical job somewhere to get themselves started.
Yes, let's read a text message. Beck from Lismore writes, I went to uni, I became a teacher. As a single mother, job security is very important to me. I said I would move anywhere in the state, New South Wales, to gain permanent employment, but I'm still waiting. Have applied for numerous jobs with no luck. I am, however, lucky to be working casually as a teacher. This has its challenges, though. No pay for 12 weeks of the year, no job security, no consistent income, and unable to get a mortgage. I am thinking of retraining or gaining another degree, but I'm concerned about adding to my already high HEC debt. Thanks for that, Beck. And that is being replayed across many of your comments and people going back to do more study. And certainly from your data, it looks like actually more people are continuing on in full-time education after their degrees, Bruce.
Well, certainly. I mean, again, this is what I was saying earlier about the number of graduates being increasing over the last 25 years. We're also seeing an increase in the number of people doing postgraduate study, particularly coursework, masters, and graduate diplomas, and a lot of that is too. I mean, it's called credential creep, and so what used to take you your year 12 high school certificate to get a job, then started to take you a bachelor degree, and now it probably might take you a postgraduate degree to get a job because of the competition in the labour market. And so we do see people increasingly taking postgraduate degrees in order to stand out a little bit in the labour market.
Yes, but we've got some great comments about that too, which I will hope to get to. I'll just read you a bit of Amy's. Great topic, Natasha. I'm coming towards the end of my PhD on the employability of liberal arts and business students from an elite Australian university, and can tell you that preparing to enter the labour market is tough for this highly qualified cohort. That's on our Facebook page if you want to read the full comment. James of Anatarkis, the Group of Eight, those older, more established, higher-ranked universities in Australia, have warned in a recent report that we are going to have a job market saturated with generalist degrees. And in another report, they also looked at quality. We'll come to quality in a tick. And those diversification of student body, which you love, means that people are coming in with lower entrance scores. Yeah. But we'll get to that. This issue, though, of generalist degrees and a job market being flooded with them,
Is that a problem? Yeah, look, I mean, there's one problem with that report too that the Group of Eight produced, and that is it doesn't show people moving to other degrees. So moving, maybe they start with a generalist degree, then they move to a specialist degree. And that's the missing gap of students crossing degrees. And I mean, we see it as well at our university where students start somewhere and then move across. And that is technically recorded as a dropout, even though they're moving, say, from a generalist degree to something that's more specialist and things like that. Mm. Look, I think, you know, picking up on Bruce's point, an educated workforce is really, really important. And I think one of the problems that we've had in Australia traditionally is we've been very short-term in our thinking about the type of workforce that we want. And look, and in the short term, there are these issues that you identify without a doubt. But what's important, I think, is we've got to be thinking about, well, what's Australia going to look like in 2030, 2040, 2050? And unless we have a workforce that's able to think critically and be able to take opportunities of jobs we don't exist yet. You know, like, you know, a generation ago, we know mobiles meant those little things that used to hang above the beds, right? And who had heard of the word cloud computing like 10 years ago? You know, those two words would never sit side by side. And we can pick hundreds of words like that. And so you need this kind of nimble, educated workforce to be able to take advantage of those opportunities.
Now, yes, but we've talked a lot about the university end of things, yeah, and the graduate end of things. Now, what about the employers themselves, those who are operating in the job market and employing graduates? How much do they need to be active in this conversation about the use of a degree?
Yeah, and that's a really important conversation. But one of the risks we always have about, I mean, and I think that's, you know, that they of course have to be at the table, but one of the problems we need to avoid, and I think this is a government that needs to lead this as well as universities, mm-hmm, is employers have, for various reasons, very short to medium term focuses. So they will sit there and say, we need these group of people now, right? And that's important that we produce as graduates. It's really important that we produce as graduates. But what we also need to be thinking is 20, 30 years down the tracks. Yeah. And I think this is where Australia's often got caught short. You often hear about a skill shortage here, and then everybody puts resources in there, and there's another skill shortage over here, and then people put resources, you know, they move around. Whereas, yeah, we need to respond to those short-term issues. But I think it's also those longer-term trends, right, which Bruce alluded to, which are really, really important. And I think that's one of the things that I think we should be most, I suppose, optimistic about in the type of graduates we're producing.
Yes, but the experience of individual graduates is still very potent for people when there aren't obvious jobs for a field. I'll come back to you. Chris in Victoria, you're a public school's careers advisor.
That's correct, and I don't see the problem as being the generalist degrees. Since the uncapping of courses, what I've noted is that the non-group of eight unis have expanded their enrolments by running popular, cheap-to-run, very highly specific vocational courses. And if I can mention a few, law, everybody's got a law degree. The ATAR's down to 70. Anything called sport is really popular. The job market is zero. Education, students are actually finding great trouble getting school placements. There are so many nurses who can't get a fourth year graduate year. Mm-hmm. So more and more I'm actually looking to advise students that they're better off doing a broad degree in an area of interest to them, and then look at post-graduation for the vocational training that they need. And I guess as a related issue, while this is happening, we're also as a nation in the process of totally trashing our trade training system and relying on skilled workers from overseas in that field as well. So highly specific vocational courses to me are a disaster and almost tantamount to fraud.
Chris, thank you very much for the call, and you have some wisdom on this from your perspective as a public schools careers advisor. Appreciate it.
That's flipped the equation, hasn't it, really? That statement there, yeah, it's a fascinating way to look at it from the other side of things, sort of saying, well, maybe, you know, people shouldn't be too specific. And again, it goes back to that balance I think we need between that specificity and that kind of generalist, the general thinking to think or learning to learn type of approach.
Yes, Bruce, just very briefly to you, you do track the trends for different degrees, don't you?
We do, and it's certainly the market is stronger for graduates of some degrees than others. Look, James has made a very good point. I'm not always a fan. I haven't always been a fan of the University of Melbourne model, which sees students do a generalist degree to start with, then specialise in postgraduate work. But it does give them time to to get settled into study and to work out exactly where they want to go in terms of occupation or profession, but also it gives them time. We always, and I always argue very strongly, that people should undertake study fully informed. They should know exactly what the potential outcomes of their choices are going to be, so they're not shocked at the end when it takes them a bit longer to find work or there are no jobs in the field for which they've studied.
Yes, that's an interesting challenge too, because what do you really know about that when you're leaving high school and entering university? John in Melbourne, you've just turned 50, done a number of degrees.
Yeah, look, I actually began as a really generalist BA in politics and history, not knowing anything about what I wanted to do with life, just thought it was interesting. And that lasted me for, I reckon, about 4 years after I graduated. I then had to... I then had to upskill, so I did a master's in maths and stats, totally different. And that lasted me for about 10 years. And then about 10 years ago, I did another master's in psychometrics. And I think that's, I've squeezed the value out of that one, and I'm going to have to upskill again.
Are you working while you're doing those master's? Because often people feel a bit stuck.
I have never not worked. But I enjoy study. Like I don't mind doing it. It's sort of like almost a time out. But I'm always sort of looking ahead and saying, right, well, if I want to do something else, what do I want to do, and do I have the skills to do it? And particularly now, I run a small business. I'm saying, I think that this is the way business is going to go, and if I'm going to turn what I want to do towards what I want to do, these are the skills I'm going to have for the next 10, 15 years. So I'm going to have to go away and get them.
Oh, fantastic. Totally inspirational, John. Thank you.
Not inspirational, it's reality. Like, you know,
yep.
If you don't do it, you get stuck behind. And I have a number of friends that I've seen that have literally been stuck behind.
Well, it's inspirational even if it is reality. And great call, thank you. I think that'll put the wind up a few of us. Kimber in Victoria, you did a creative arts degree, and then what happened?
Well, the interesting thing is that the creative arts degree was both generalist and specific. So it was like half theory and half practice, and it was through the VCA at the University of Melbourne. And so we basically had a chance to do theatre or visual art or all those wonderful things and specialise in the practice of them. But we also had a really rigorous academic element to it. And so, you know, we all came out with, I guess, two skill sets, and I think it's been amazing because a lot of us who've done that have gone on to do things we didn't expect. Like, I'm now a musician, but I didn't do music. And I think it just the ability to write grant proposals and have that skill set really helps creative graduates. And I think that's one point. But the other point is that they dismantled our course and took it down to VCA and sort of put it into the specialist model as a sort of theory ambulance, which all the people who were specialising in visual arts or dance hated because it didn't have any real rigour to what they were doing day in and day out. So I guess my point is, generalist is great, so is specific, but how do you marry the two? And I think that was a really good model.
Yes, I'm going to read a Facebook page, a message that we got just on that from Goodell. Yep, same here. I did a useless degree, a creative one. I think students need to be seriously counselled in vocational qualifications when undertaking creative arts or generalised arts degrees. There just aren't clear job pathways. I can't even get basic office jobs because all I have done is work in retail, unskilled childcare, and made independent theatre. Your thoughts, Kimber?
I think that, you know, in my cohort of graduates have gone on to do really incredible things. And I think it's about the rigour of that course. So if you're really getting your writing and research skills up, you can go on to do anything. I mean, I wanted to be a singer. I didn't think I would be, but I ended up doing that and having a business out of it and a career out of it. But I think part of it's the fact that I was able to be creative and, you know, had time to mix music into theatre. But the other part was that I had to do arts management and I had to do all those things and just, yeah, learn to think. So I guess what I'm really saying is, it's how do you marry something specific that you're passionate about with really solid skills that aren't going to leave you in a retail job.
Kimber, thank you. Great call. Sally in New South Wales, Bachelor of Arts, first degree. Your daughter wants to do the same. You've got some advice.
Oh, well, I've just been really enjoying this morning's talkback and reflecting on our experience. I did a Bachelor of Arts 25 years ago, and now my daughter wants to do a very similar course. And I've been thinking this year just how different our experiences are, because when I set off to do mine, mine was in English literature and fine arts, and I'm going to come out, I came out less employable than she's going to, because she's thinking about doing archaeology and history and Italian. That's what she's really passionate about.
And isn't that wonderful?
I think it's fantastic. I am 100% behind her. I think she's going to be a well-rounded, lovely human being as a result of this. But we were at a careers expo and she was getting advice from people at universities saying, we advise you to go away, check out the job prospects because there's no job prospects in this. And I watched her face fall and I thought, this is terrible advice for an 18-year-old girl. This is an awful thing to do to her. Be in the car on the way home, trying, picking her back up again about, you go and do what you want to do and open your life up. She's a regional teenager. She's going to go and move to the city, and this is the time for her life to open up, not to close down and go into job training mode. It's a great opportunity to go to uni and start your life. I went off and I've done 4 uni degrees now. I work as a research academic. So, I followed this twisty path to get there. I don't think it's a linear path.
Yeah, great call, and lots of complex questions within all that too. Sally, thanks for the call. James, you want to pick up on that?
Yeah, that's an inspiring call as well. Look, I think that's something, you know, often I do a lot of Careers Advisors Day and students will come to me and say to me, and their parents, you know, say, oh, what job's available? And I think, you know, the days where you'd sit there and say, oh, you know, you're doing engineering, so you get an engineering job, you're doing this, so you get that job, you know. I mean, when I was in banking and finance, in my economic forecasting team, I had an architect, I had someone who had an arts background and someone who had an accounting background. And because what I really valued from them was their ability to critically analyse the information around us, right?
It's not without pain for those people. You can imagine there's been pain that they've done, not for everyone, but for some. Yeah. They've done an architect degree, they cannot find adequate work, and now they've ended up in another scene altogether.
Well, she could have done architecture. She had that opportunity, but she was just expanding her different knowledge to see what she could get. But I think that's one of the things that I often say to students is, look, go off and do research here, but don't just sit there and say, you know, that linearity or that non-linearity is really important now. And I think that's one of the things that I often counsel students on is to say, well, look, there are lots of skills that you need to learn beyond just that kind of knowledge to make you an architect or an accountant or something like that. You know, there's emotional intelligence, there's all these soft skills that are really, really important, and especially working across silos, you know, and that's one of the biggest skills that employers want these days. You know, talking about bringing employers to the table, but unfortunately, and, you know, going back to that highly specialized degree, one of the risks of those highly specialized degrees is you never teach people to work across silos. You teach people to only work in one discipline, one silo. So we're kind of reproducing, the risk is we reproduce the very things that we don't want. And that's why I think that balance between the skills and the generalist is so important.
Bruce Guthrie, thinking about, all those graduates flooding into the marketplace, and what we're saying here is that they need to get creative. They need to think laterally about what skill set they've built and how else they might engage in order to find work. Nevertheless, though, is there such a thing as degree deflation, as some people describe it? This idea that a degree becomes devalued when there's so many people looking for work?
I think, I think the increase in postgraduate study suggests there might be some notion of degree deflation abroad. It might be more in the minds of recruiters than in the minds of graduates. I think it's important for graduates and students to understand what it is they're doing, what they're getting, and where it might take them. Sally's example of her daughter being, you know, told about poor employment prospects in archaeology. It's fair that she's told that, so she's informed before she makes any decisions, but it shouldn't, hopefully, deter her from studying a field that she feels she could love.
Well, that's the risk, isn't it, that with this focus on vocational outcomes, which is important, we cannot deny that the passion is lost, that passion for learning.
Yes, look, nothing... I guess nothing is going to take the... taking you know, the passion out of something that people really love more than having to find a job in it and find there's no work available. It's very difficult, and recruiters, of course, have to take a different view of graduates as well. As James was saying earlier, they for recruiters, a graduate is the incoming workforce and middle management 5 years down the track. Universities don't see themselves as actually training people for the workforce. You go to your average humanities academic, your history or English literature. They're teaching their students about about theory and about the theory of history and how to read history and historiography. They don't see themselves as training workers for the labour market.
Yes. Can I just pick up on that, though, James? Because traditionally academia, doing a degree was certainly a big part of it, was being trained to become an academic. And we've had some very interesting comments around that. And I know this is a huge issue for many graduates, who science graduates especially too, who end up doing a PhD and then end up on this kind of endless cycle of short-term contracts. There's no sense that they can build a research career anymore. It's so contingent on the cyclical nature of research funding, that they are very much victims of the increased casualisation of the research workforce as well.
Yeah, and in a way, what we see is the casualisation of the broader workforce making its way into the education or the higher education sector, which I think is a real shame. And, you know, I've got higher students who have graduated, PhD students who have graduated, and, you know, and the truth is that some of them are really happy to be ongoing casual workers. It suits their lifestyle. I mean, I don't know how long that happiness will last, but some of them will work. But I think if we do have this pool, and we do have this pool of casual workforces, and a lot of people blame university management. I think it's deeper than this. I think it's this changing nature of the structural nature of the workforce. And I think it's something that does need to be addressed. I think it's wasted talent, and I think it's a wasted opportunity. I think there's all these really amazing academics out there who are wasting
PhDs,
yeah.
Barely got any job security.
But I will say that I think that's got less to do with the degree and more to do with the structural changes in the workforce. Mm. But just going back to the point that Bruce said, I think is really important. You know, I teach humanities, right? And so it is one of those classic sort of generalists. I do the introduction. I teach introduction to sociology. And a lot of times people say, well, what's the point of that? And are you training me for a job? And I say, well, I am training you to see the world, to shine a light on parts of the world you don't usually see. And the skill of writing is a transferable skill. And I think that's important that we continue to go, the skill of this analysis, analysing this newspaper article, analysing, you know, what you're reading is a transferable skill. And that's really important, that no matter where you end up, that those skills are transferable. I think that's one of the important
things. The key is that students need to understand that, but employers need to understand that translation process as well, and they need to be reading people's CVs with that understanding.
And that's one of the missions I'm on at the moment, actually, to be honest with you. I'm trying to spend a lot of time with employers saying to them, this is what you get with one of our graduates or a graduate in that area. I think it's really important.
That is absolutely crucial. Building that literacy right across the realm. Natasha Mitchell joining you this morning for our Friday Life Matters Talk, as is Professor James Avanitakis and Bruce Guthrie. James is at the University of Western Sydney, an academic, a researcher, a trailblazer as well. And Bruce Guthrie is Policy and Strategy Advisor at Graduate Careers Australia, really helping, linking universities and employers and crunching the data on what happens for graduates. And you are with us too, full board of calls. Jackie in Victoria, you did a grad dip in museum studies.
Yes, I did, a long time ago now, but was fortunate to be of that generation where I haven't actually been out of work ever. Of course, by my own choice, I've sometimes stopped work. But I just wanted to point out how during your university years, or if you choose to do a degree, you'll make some of the friends that you'll have for life, and who'll be really influential in where you go, and especially in the arts or the smaller industries like museums or performing arts. It's all about your networks of people, and some of those networks you do make during your degree. So it's not really the theoretical stuff as well. It's about your social skills and how you make connections across different areas.
Yeah, very good point that. Thank you for making it, Jackie.
That's okay, and I hope people do just do what they love, because in the end that's what's going to make you happy.
Do what you love. It's what makes you happy. Sarah in Canberra, now what would you like to make, a point you'd like to make about overseas students?
Yeah, Yes, yes. It's very important to promote education in Australia, and especially for students going from high school to university. I understand there are some places in Tasmania where there's 40% illiteracy rate in some areas, and I think it's really important that we promote education to Australian students. At ANU, in the postgraduate areas, there's a lot of international students, and most of them on scholarships. Government scholarships. And in the engineering section, I was talking to an African man and I asked him if there are any Australian students there, and he said no, because he'd been told by his teacher that Australians weren't smart enough to get into the courses. Mm. So I think there's a huge problem if there are Australian students not getting into those postgraduate areas, and there are illiterate areas in Australia, in the poor rural areas of Australia, and yet we have masses of international students coming here and utilising those educational resources.
Thanks, Sarah, very much.
And it's a wonderful opportunity to be educated, and Europe promotes that idea, and we should be more like that, I think.
Hear, hear. Liz in Tasmania. Thank you very much, Sarah. Liz in Tasmania, several degrees, most not vocationally useful, so you have an interesting point to make here, I imagine.
Yeah, my story is a little bit similar to the chap who did his PhD in the pub in Cambodia, though I haven't done a PhD in a pub in Cambodia. My first job out of school was in the public service, and I was so incredibly bored, though it was the best paid job I've ever had. I went and did a diploma in hotel management, and always hated working in the hospitality industry, actually, but I ended up going to do a BA purely because I wanted to, purely for... It was just after HEX came in, and I thought, bugger the HEX debt. Mm. I just want to do something I enjoy, and I'll see. It's a bit like, you know, in one of the Indiana Jones films where he steps out into thin air and he finds that the bridge is under his feet that he hasn't seen. So you step out and you hope that something's there to catch you. I ended up getting a part-time job while I was studying my arts degree, using my diploma of hotel management basic accounting qualifications, and so I was just working part-time as a bookkeeper, ended up doing a fine arts degree as well, but now I run my own business as an accountant. So it's given me the lifestyle, being my own business, my own... I determine what I do, when I do, and it's only a very small business. I'll probably never make enough money to pay my HEX debt back, but...
But you're happy.
I'm happy, but the point I wanted to make was, in that lifestyle, I have spent time working on boards, on small groups, large groups, associations. Okay. And I feel like I have contributed to society in a really productive way.
Fully rounded. Thanks, Liz, very much for that. That's a terrific call. It just goes to show many paths and many prongs. We've got a bit of a full board of calls and we're racing head to the clock, so I want to get to as many people as I can. And look, I just need to let you know that I can't read your text messages at the moment. I know they were pouring in, but the system's gone and got a little bit broken on me. So sorry about that. I'll look forward to reading them when we get it back up again, probably after the show. Julie, good morning to you. You're a careers counsellor. Hello, have we got you, Julie?
No, well, I think you might have Penny.
Oh, Penny, there you are.
Now, Penny from Victoria. Yes,
I think you want to talk about the huge cost of PhDs to a student.
Yes, well, most people who do PhDs, or certainly myself, I did it very late in life, and the cost involved for mature students when you're sacrificing income is very, very significant. Plus, we've got to consider taxpayer costs, because universities get paid at least $100,000 for every PhD that they produce. So there's a moral hazard here that the universities want to get in as many PhD students, each department or centre, research centre, because it's prestigious and it brings money to them. But there's moral hazard, because, as you were talking about just 5 minutes before, there's structural changes in the university system. Mm. And there's decreasing pool of, it's not expanding relative to numbers for funding of research. So they know, the universities know that pool is decreasing. They know that the people who do PhDs, most of them want to go into academia. We're talking about very specialist career path people at this stage. We're not talking about undergraduate arts. And they do not inform PhD students about this, and the younger ones particularly will be caught out. But when you, if you've been working in the workforce, and you don't know about the university system and what's happening with the casualisation and the extreme,
you might be cast adrift. Yes, indeed.
Extreme competition for research funds. You don't know, and
yes.
Yet they'll take you on, and you lose that income.
You.
So it's there's moral hazard here.
Yes, thank you, Penny, very much. And I know people will be going, yes, that's my situation. What responsibility do universities have here? And I'll come to my guests on that. Julie in Victoria, we've got you now. You're a careers counsellor. Have we got you, Julie?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi. What point would you like to make?
Okay. Well, basically, I've worked in both the schools and universities. I've worked in both secondary and tertiary. And I really wanted to call because I don't think we can make, general sweeping comments about what sort of degrees or whatever people should choose. Everyone's an individual. Many people, of course, don't want to go on and do lots of degrees one after the other. And, of course, not just the cost, but, they just don't like studying particularly and they just, want to get great skills and then get out there. And so if I'm staying in Year 12, I will still, get them to think about what they most enjoy. Obviously, some people have no idea, and then they just choose what they think is going to be best.
And that's not a bad thing. They shouldn't have no idea sometimes.
Right. Well, it's actually normal to have no idea at that age. You just have to think about what do I like doing. The verbs. Think about not just the nouns or the names of the courses, but what are things I like doing. But let's say, for example, you have someone who says, "I really want to do graphic design." Well, I would say, go and do it, but make them aware that there's very limited job opportunities. And the thing is that what they ought to do when they're following that if they're enjoying it and they're doing their degree and they get into second year by second year or so, if there's careers counsellors on campus, go and see them. And they start to learn. And there's now lots of workshops in the major universities anyway where students are learning how to recognise and not just recognise their transferable skills but learn to articulate them to employers.
You've got to get smart. Thank you very much, Julie, for the call. And that's all we've got time for in terms of calls, but I'd like to wrap with my guests. Bruce Guthrie, any final points from you based on the sweep of calls that we've had just in the last minute or so that we've got?
Some great stories. And you talk to a person who's been out of uni 10, 20, 30 years about their careers, and you'll get a range of different stories of people who have taken opportunities when they arose, little moments of serendipity that have come along that have changed their course. So it's young people thinking about university, don't be put off by the current state of the economy and the labour market. Get stuck in, take something, do something you love. And have a fantastic time at uni.
That seems to be the concluding conclusion of today's discussion, James.
Yeah, whatever he said, plus. I think that point about there is no one single homogenised story here, we can see the difficulties and the exciting times that have happened. But, look, I remain really excited by this. I remain really excited by the changing nature of the sort of diversity that we're getting through universities. I think it's really exciting. And we didn't get to touch on a changing ATAR thing, but I think that's also really important because...
The point being that people with lower ATAR scores are coming into university now and people have concerns about the quality then of outcomes.
Yeah, and I've seen students just come to university and just blossom, and I've seen students with really high ATAR come to university and really struggle because of that changing environment. So I don't think, the ATAR is a really simple way to do it. And in fact, for me, I think ATAR is not a particularly great indicator of where people will end up because, I can show you low ATAR students with that are in PhD courses and doing really well. I think that we shouldn't be scared. I think we should be proud of that. I'm really, the term for this is a pretty ugly term, which is massification, but I think it's inspiring and I think it's a social justice and the way to really confront in some communities, low SES communities, it's a way to confront their entrenched sort of cycles of challenges, and I think it's exciting times.
Gee, look, so many comments coming in. Thank you very much. Please keep them coming on our Facebook page or our website, abc.net.au/rn, and look for Life Matters. huge interest from the Radio National audience in this issue, as we anticipated, and we might pick up on some of the themes for other shows. I want to tell you about, well, before I do that, let me thank my guests. Bruce Guthrie, thank you so much for joining us from Graduate Careers Australia.
It's a pleasure, Natasha. Thank you.
And Professor James Avanatakis from the University of Western Sydney, thank you.
Thanks so much, Natasha.
Terrific guests. And I want to let you know about EdPod, by the way. This is our monthly education podcast only, so it's a bit special, and it's a collation of education stories across the month, always terrific. It lands on your lap today. Head to EdPod. It's linked to from the Life Matters website as well, I think. Lots of great stuff coming up, from Shanghai cram schools to the secrets of Finland. We're heading to East Geelong Primary School. All sorts of good stuff for teachers. Spread the word. Thank you to the team. Ian Coombe produced today's Cracker Talkback. The EP is Julie Browning, Tracy Tromf, Jane Shields, Georgia Power, and you. Catch you on Monday. Books and Arts next.
Hi, it's Michael Cathcart here from Books and Arts Daily. This past week, we've been keeping tabs on the art and politics of the Sydney Biennale. Philosopher Alain de Botton stirred up lots of discussion with his claim that good art is useful art. And on Friday, the first of our Euroclassic book clubs, a whole show devoted to the French classic Madame Bovary. That's Books and Arts right here on the RN website.